If you see something, say something. At Reply, weird things come with any weird story you find on the web, and you can help make weirdthings.com even weirder.
Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Mr. Brian Brushwood.
See, I only took a half sip because I knew as soon as my soda came to my lips, I'm like, he's going to call on me first. So I took a half sip, and then I made a whole point of pointing that out. And then it was time to introduce our other co-host.
Wasn't it all awkward?
Yes.
And joining us as usual, Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Hi, everybody, it's me. Don't panic.
If it takes a while for him to respond, it's because he's doing the show from the 70s because of his time-traveling mustache.
Tell you what, man,
it's a reality distortion field of a mustache. I feel like I could get away with things I wouldn't otherwise do.
I see that mustache, and I feel like I woke up from a reverse coma.
It's like the broken window theory. Like, when people have mustaches, they're just drawn to do bad things because they assume, like, well, what could it hurt? I got a mustache.
That's I really feel like I'm a tucked-in white shirt and polyester slacks away from Argo cosplay.
Oh, totally. I think you're kind of there now. Let's get on with the weird stuff we're going to talk about.
Yeah. Entirely too normal here. Let's weird it up. I'm going to take off my shirt.
So on Halloween, that's not when this happened. That was the wrong article. But you could have read it on Halloween.
On St. Patrick's Day, this did not occur.
So IO9 has an article somewhere that they put on their website, IO9. And it was 17 things to do when you achieve immortality.
Right on. Now, when immortality, it's talking about, like, got a wish from a genie immortality or body backups, virtual backups of your identity immortality.
We're going to go with the science kind of immortality, what to do when you get that. And they're based upon the idea of where the singularitarians and the people who are all into, like, hey, let's all live forever. Well, what do you do when you can live forever?
Chess.
I don't know, swimming pools.
Backstrokes. Right. Maybe a little croquet. Maybe a little crochet croquet. It's a new mashup.
Yep. Let me move right on to the next one. We seem to have this one settled.
No, I would imagine. Now, here's one of the weird things. There was a pretty good article on.
Hey, that's the name of this podcast.
Hey, ding, ding, ding.
There was a pretty good article on cracked.com talking about why it would suck to live forever. And one of the points it brought up that really stuck with me is, have you guys noticed as we enter adulthood that, like, time seems to speed up? Like, when you're a kid, a year is an eternity. A friendship for a week is like you've known them forever. And then,
are you trying to tell us you're sick of us?
No. I'm just saying, like the horrific.
Brian,
picture,
are we breaking up as friends?
I'm just saying, maybe it needs a little space. One of the things that.
We can spend more time with you, Brian. I mean, if that's what this is about, like, we can totally clear our schedules. We can spend more time together.
Just looking for guys with bigger mustaches.
We can do this in one room, Brian. We can be there. We can come there for you. I know you're going through a lot right now.
The horrific image that it painted.
You got a new baby and you want uncles in the house. Just say it.
Said that's actually true. That'd be awesome. Can you imagine we have the kid and you guys move in and then we just turn on the cameras and it becomes Hollywood gold? My weird dads. The idea was the idea in the article that it
why
presented
I needed therapy
was go like ahead. As you start to measure time in eons, you know, in geological epochs.
How long is an eon, Brian?
I think an eon is like 3 whiles, maybe two or which is like 12 moments, right?
I think an eon is from when the final episode of Game of Thrones to when the new season starts.
That sounds about right. Same for
no,
Breaking
no,
Bad.
No, 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 no. He was the one that wasn't Fenkman. In
No, you're thinking of Winnie the Pooh's friend.
That's right. That's why it takes so long to answer. But as you start to measure time in thousands of years, like you meet people and it's like they're just like flashes in your life. They come and they go instantaneously. You can't keep track of them anymore, and you stop even trying.
Answers, if you will.
Like, isn't that kind of what happens with old people as it is? Like, they meet people, like, what's the point? You'll be dead in a few years. We'll all be dead.
Maybe. I think.
Wait, hold on. Wait a minute. I guess, can you give me the TLDR on what you were just talking about? Because I didn't quite get the point.
As you live longer and longer, and you measure time in longer and longer increments, time seems to speed up to where like years just blaze past you and friendships come and go in the blink of an eye. And it's just like, what's the point? And you already see that with old people in their 80s. Like they meet someone like a 6-year relationship to us is like, wow, man, you were practically married. That's like a lifetime that you spent with that person. But someone in their 80s, like they'll meet someone and then what's this going to last? Maybe 6 more years and then one of us will die. What's the point?
I guess. All right. So your theory is that this phenomenon, and I do agree, because obviously, like I remember from the end of summer, when summer ended in school, the concept of the next summer, it was like the Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Like summer and winters. Like it was just like this will last for the next 14 years. And what happens, we will all be different people on the end of it. Empires will be built and fall. It's just going to be forever. And then as you get older, you know, all of a sudden you're like, holy crap, is this year over?
Yes.
Like I feel like I blinked and I farted and 2012 is just gone. And right. Now no one is going to be like talking about the world ending anymore because everyone just kind of forgot that about 3 months ago.
There's some interesting research into that about how, you know, when time flows or when it doesn't flow. I know personally that if I have a really good trip, it can seem very vivid. Like I had a great time. It was this time last year that I was in Shanghai, and I was out there for under 2 weeks, but it was a very great experience, and it felt up a lot of time. You know, when I'm just sitting around, if I'm in the middle of writing a book, I'm in the middle of the book. But if I'm not doing anything else, I live alone. I'm a hermit.
Mm-hmm.
So days bleed into weeks bleed into months, they bleed into years. That's a thing that sort of made me want to step up and do things like write and do more things, was because of that. I just
leave a mark, sure.
I mean, I remember I was living in this house for a year, and I'm like, holy crap, a year went by, and I didn't even think about that. And
I mean, I guess that's what, I mean, I'd like to have more life, but how do you suppose you solve that problem? Like, do you think in a culture where everyone gets to live forever, do you think it's just assumed like the longer you live, the slower you do things or the bigger projects you undertake? Because, I mean, if you're going to live forever, all of a sudden, at some point, you know, once you've done a few 10-year projects, then you start to take on your first 100-year project. And then that gets done. You do that 2 or 3 more times. And then you become the kind of person like, well, I'm going to go for a 1,000-year project. And you work for 1,000 years on something.
But yeah, I think that as you do that, is it sort of your frame of reference changes. Now, if you knew you had, if you could look like this, be this conditioner or healthier forever, and you start to think about, okay, make sure your girls get, you know, raised so they're, you know, mature adults and you look out for them. But then you could say, okay, you know, would you want to go live in some other country and learn the language to the point that you could be a local like Sean Connery and You Only Live Twice?
I mean,
but think about that. I mean, that's a thing where you could say, okay, not just learn a language, but immerse yourself in a culture so you could have a whole experience in that way. And that, I mean, that's just thinking fresh, really.
Here's the question.
Well, I mean, like, shouldn't we also, like, already have the answer to this question? We've seen life expectancy go to, you know, unheard of levels from, you know, just hundreds of years ago. Shouldn't we already have the blueprint for this, as life expectancy would go farther and farther from here to the point where, let's say, hopefully we eventually get to a point where we choose when we want to die, if ever?
I mean, I
like,
guess
have like I guess like do are we more prone to do longer projects now that we live far longer than we used to back in the day? Or is it just, you know, do we live the same kind of cycles of like we focus on things for you know, a percentage of, you know, like, you know, for a year or so, if we do, or
we've already seen a culture where retirement is much less nowadays about, I mean, when our parents, when our grandparents retired, the idea was, you know, you traded your time for 40 years for a company. And then when you were done, you just, you know, went fishing every day. And nowadays, even that's kind of different because we know that when you do retirement that way, you kind of tend to kick the bucket within, you know, 2 to 5 years. But then, what's that, Andrew?
Well, I mean, I would say that unfortunately for the economy,
Andrew's
no,
dad.
That's
yes.
The problem now is that
Exactly. So nowadays, like retirement is code. It usually means, you know, starting a job you love. Maybe you don't make as much money,
hopefully,
but you do something different. You start from the beginning. And I mean, I would imagine you would get a more extreme version of that, where you do something for 50 to 100 years and then switch.
Well, that's the thing is that, you know, we have a problem with a lot of cities and states are facing fiscal crises because they have people who they start at 25. They give them these they work there for 30 years. And they retire with very generous pension packages that are equal to their entire year of, you know, what they made in a year. And then now you look at you're 55 and you're going on retirement and life expectancy could be another 30 years on top
sure,
of that.
Yeah.
And somebody's got to write those checks. And that's the other side of it. We won't worry about that. But as you mentioned, like old age, how does it change in adult education? That's not a thing that you who would think, you know, let's send a 50-year-old off to school to learn something new.
Mm-hmm.
Now makes great sense. So I think that's part of it. And think about the things we have to make. And part of what maybe makes life precious now is that we have to make choices. But instead of choices, you can have priorities and you can say, I will do this first, then I will do this, then I'll do that. And there's a lot of things that I don't do because, you know, there's no such thing as immortality right now. You
sure.
know, I'm a guy, I don't drink, I don't do drugs, I don't smoke because I just don't want to do anything that will take any time off of what I have.
Right.
Or time that I could be creative. But
now, do you think that part of the reason, you know, we've seen as life expectancy has extended. Do you think that culturally we've seen a difference as far as what we expect of people in their 50s and 60s? Like, I would imagine, you know, when I was a kid, it was, you know, embarrassing if so-and-so retired and then you saw him working at Walmart or something. Like, the idea of doing a job after you retire was always associated with, like, oh, that poor person needs to work. Whereas nowadays, I think we see it more as like, oh, so now you want to do this for a while.
I think it's healthy. In my family, you know, my grandfather and both my father, when they hit retirement, that just meant moving on to a different job because both of them were very healthy, very good prime of their life and have a lot of things to do. My father still works and you know, he's active both. You know, he was a federal agent for 30 years and, you know, carried a gun. And then now he's involved in fly fishing, does a lot of civic stuff too, waterway conservation, and keeps himself very active in those things. And I look at that as my model. I'll have different phases of my career, things I will do, but you know, I'm still living off the plans that I made when I was 14.
Yeah. Are you ever going to retire, Justin?
I don't see retirement. I mean, like you said, like I don't see that. The idea of getting the gold watch and going off, you know, to just live a life of leisure is something
gold
that
watch.
Really
gold watch.
He hid this watch. I guess like I've always like fun for me is doing things and creating things. And when you do things and create things and you want to make that, you know, a part of your living, then, you know, why would that ever change? You know,
so when you think about like really, really long lifespans, you think about, okay, you're going to see Elon Musk and other people colonize Mars. And you say, okay, well, what's
the
trip to Mars?
By the way, the lid got blew off that the initials there, right?
Officially. Wait, what?
I said, apparently somebody put there was a comment on Weird Things just right before we went live that apparently at some conference, one of the SpaceX engineers said that MCT, right? It's and it's for Mars Colonial Transport.
So that was, we had an article about this mystery rocket that SpaceX is working on, that Elon Musk has talked about, and it's MCT were the initials, and the speculation I put out there that it could be Mars crew transport or Mars cargo transport. But Justin says, I didn't know that. So Mars Colonial Transport?
That was, yeah, I guess, and I'll look into it. I just approved the comment right before we went live, but But yeah, no, apparently the genie's out of the bottle, if that's to be believed. And that's extraordinarily exciting that, you know, we're
so
like, this is not
this.
Down
we're
the
right
line.
Now,
like, people are building this.
That's amazing.
Well, Justin and I are wearing our SpaceX hats. Okay.
Hold on, Andrew. What, before we start talking, let me put on my SpaceX hat here. So
yes,
we can
put on
our
SpaceX hats. So we live in a period of time where we're credibly talking about Mars colonies and the idea of longevity and living that. Like, you know, if you go ask me, right, do I want to go to Mars? I don't know, like trip there 6 months. Then it's not like I'm just going to pop my feet on the ground and go, all right, did it. Let's go back. You know, I got to go. Don't want to watch some of this time shifted TV. I need to watch it real time.
It's got to be. It's got to be like a what? Okay, so let's say lifespan is not really a concern. You're just planning the trip. How long do you give for Mars to make that? What is it? 12 months out there, 18 months out, and then 18 months back. Is that what it is?
Maybe 6 months. I don't think. Trying to think of.
We'll just make up number. We'll say it's 8 months out and 8 months back, yeah. Give or take. Right. How long do you spend on Mars to make that worth the trip? To where you don't feel dumb.
What is Mars? What's going on there right now? Is it like Antarctica?
There's 100 colonists there. Yeah, roughly Antarctic. Like you can. There's enough of a burgeoning space economy that like you can plan your own day trips, and they've got, you know, they got a few rovers available for you, a few flying craft that you can go around, a few raw materials you can build something if you feel like it.
Okay. Also, caveat, there's a certain industry that just had onerous legislation on their working practices in the Valley of Southern California that has instead decided to relocate all their business to Mars.
Oh, is that a specific reference you're making?
There's the whole the porn industry just.
Oh, yeah. They're all like, we're going bareback. We're going Martian.
Screw you, pigs. We're going to Mars.
Outbreak of STDs just totally devastates the Mars colony. Planet gonorrhea.
So,
oh, where are you? Mars? Oh.
No, but I didn't know. Of course you didn't.
Yeah, sure, it's who else goes to Mars?
That's right. Why else do you go to Mars? They're like, for legitimate scientific research. What?
Well, we bet it was research. You bet we're making all sorts of discoveries and probes.
Doing a little spelunking up there in the Martian terrain.
So like, if it's like Antarctica, kind of like, I ain't going. I mean, unless I could, like, I could really contribute to some sort of scientific research, because I know me in, like, I like the great outdoors to an extent, but unless you give me a purpose, like, oh, we got to go find the collar from one of the Yellowstone wolves, we got to find it, which I've done, that's cool. But if I just kind of like, you just kind of make your own time on Mars, I'd be there like 2 days. I'd be like, man, this internet's slow.
Wow, that's amazing. Like, on the flip side,
honest.
What is the line for which would have to be crossed? What is the main line that has to be crossed before you're like, all right, Mars, let's party?
McDonald's, Taco Bell.
Really? Wow. This is okay. On the flip side, and this isn't me, but I just finished reading the book Ultra Marathon Man by Dean someone or other. This guy like runs, you know, 100-mile marathon, ultra marathons. He runs 200-mile ultra marathons. He runs across Death Valley in the dead of summer. And one thing he did just to do it was he got a small group was getting together to do the world's first marathon to the South Pole. And they went down to Antarctica and they had to wait for 3 weeks to find a single day where the weather was fair enough over a 26-mile stretch to go. And a bunch of other people were like, well, I can't do it with shoes on. I got to do it with snowshoes. And he was the only one who ran in shoes and is, as of the publishing of the book, the only man to run a marathon ending at the South Pole. And just to hear him describe, like, he's got annoyed millionaire tourists who have paid, and they're annoyed because the DC-3 that they need to get from the base camp over to the drop-off to go to the South Pole is unavailable day after day because they're waiting for the right weather conditions. and you know, the stuff that they deal with in Antarctica, stuff like having to make sure to sleep with your tube of toothpaste, because if you don't, the next morning when you get out, it will be a brick and you won't be able to brush your teeth in the morning. It's unreal, the commitment.
Yeah, I had a friend that did a marathon, and not the South Pole one, but did a marathon in Antarctica, which was just amazing. But I read up on some of the ultra marathon stuff too, and at first I'm like, man, that's really cool. But then you start reading about like all of the foot care problems and stuff, the toenails that come off, and like at the end of these marathons, the euphoria sounds great, and they're like, oh yeah, you know, you're not going to be, you know, you're going to be hobbling for, you know, weeks or months or whatever else like that, and you know, your feet are torn apart, and it's really, and I'm like, oh, I'll prefer to read about it.
Yeah, well, I think in the book he says you're supposed to recover a day for every mile you race. So in the case of a marathon, you're supposed to spend 26 days recovering. And then, and of course, in an ultra marathon, that gets problematic when you've got 50-mile, 100-mile, 150-mile events where theoretically you have to recover for the rest of the year.
Awesome. Well, so maybe at least we'll go to Mars. That's our plan for longevity.
That's all we got.
And hopefully they'll have a Taco Bell, or else Maine's chilling here in you know, L.A.
One thing, like, if you start doing that, like, sports could all of a sudden get really, really super violent.
Sure. Oh, yeah. If you live forever and all of a sudden body death is just an inconvenience, body loss.
Felix Baumgartner, guy used a suit to go do a reentry.
Yeah, man.
What a wuss.
I'll just back up my brain. I'll tie all the helium balloons I can find to my body and just go up forever until I hit space. And then I'll freeze with double middle fingers in the air, and my corpse will fall down.
Your corpse.
By the way, in that culture, like, what dandies do we look like in terms of what we find squeamish and too violent, and the things that turn our stomach?
Man, totally living in a Groundhog Day world. The only problem is with you wouldn't be able to remember your actual event of death. You would back up like right before it, I guess. I mean, unless you had like implants and that recorded real time. But would you want to remember your death?
I don't know.
That'd be messed up, man. That'd be weird.
Well, time for a commercial break.
Our first sponsorship comes from Michael Fritz. He says, phase one, get that ridiculous thing off Justin's lip. All right. Phase two, the Sidekick Foundation is a national charity that gives martial arts scholarships to at-risk children and those with special needs. Every year, we have a charity drive and raise money for those children, and this year, I will break bricks. And this is I being Michael Fritz, not me. I'm not breaking anything. I will break bricks while they burn with athletic fuel used by Brian Brushwood during one of his stage shows. Nice. I'm asking for any donations that you're willing to give. Go ahead on over to bit.ly/sidekickfound to donate. Also, visit sidekickfoundation.org for more information, and USK Karate for more info on our schools and the show. And if you're in the South Florida area on December 22nd, come check out their demonstration. We'd like to thank Mike for his sponsorship of Weird Things. If you would like to do so, go ahead on over to weirdthings.com/sponsor.
Here is something weird, and as of the recording of this podcast, I have still not been able to find an explanation. There was an explosion over the weekend in Indianapolis. Do you hear about this?
No, I did not.
So an Indianapolis neighborhood is still off limits while police try to figure out what caused a horrific explosion that killed two people and prompted nearly 200 residents to flee. With no hint of a problem in advance, no telltale smell of a gas leak, the residents were all of a sudden frightened by the sound of an explosion, and an entire, like, several houses have been blown apart. No evidence of a meth lab, no evidence of a pipe leak. Again, they've gone over, tried to find any sort of pipe leak. They can't find any trace of that whatsoever. They brought in the ATF to go in and investigate. Windows and doors have been blown up. Houses have been blown apart. They're surprised that not more people died in this.
So, okay. So if we're talking rough equivalent blast, we talking Tunguska? Are we talking, I don't know, like giant propane tank or propane factory explosion or what?
I mean, yeah, Tunguska covered, you know, probably something the size of a state. So that was way too big. But this is a neighborhood just wiped out, charred. Just we don't know. And we don't know what caused it.
How many people died?
Two people died. And the authorities were amazed that more people did not. It has everything. If you're a conspiracy theorist.
Tell me it immediately got blamed on fracking. Like, tell me somebody prematurely just announced it's got to be fracking. And then
John Krasinski. Yeah. He's out. He's gonna crack this case.
I didn't hear anything about fracking, and let's let's not enable anybody who's already jumping off half cocked on that one. So if you go take a look at Indianapolis explosion, you can actually see it. Why don't you guys take a look there, and we'll use the theater of the mind.
All right, hold on. I'm typing in Indianapolis explosion. Oh, look at that! Finished it. For me, a massive Indianapolis explosion baffles investigators. Holy cow! There, okay, it looks as though. All right, so picture your cookie cutter neighborhood, your tiny ant like conformity, as far as the eye could see. Picture one house is totally gone. Like there's just nothing but rubble there. The house to the left and to the right of it. One of them is mostly gone. The other one is about half gone. The house behind it, the backyard, is destroyed and covered in rubble. And there are...
And just to clarify, this rubble is splinters. It is boards, not pieces of cool. wall. It was made out of toothpicks and blown apart.
Yeah. Okay.
This is like Michael Bay blowed up.
Well, I mean, the first thing that pops into my mind is you know, the scenario from Fight Club where they say the pilot light goes out over the weekend, the entire house fills with gas, the compressor from the refrigerator trips, the spark ignites everything. I feel like that would look like it. Man, what a spectacular explosion.
And you look at other photos, you see it's not just one house. There are houses in several directions got totally wiped out by this.
Man.
But isn't like the Fight Club thing, and not to offer any spoilers, but isn't that like not true?
Well, it turns out that's not what happened, right? But it's a plausible scenario.
Is it a plausible scenario? Like,
I mean, it is to me.
I mean, it sounds like it, you know, but I don't know if it is.
I don't know. I mean, I assume that kind of science came from somewhere. Man, that guy is a beast.
Yes, propane is explosive. Doing my part. So it's just one of those things where I was thinking that when I read this a couple of days ago, I'm like, I'll save this for today, but it'll probably be solved by now. No.
But now it's still not solved. So we got to figure they definitely – I mean, people are suggesting they think it's gas, but, I mean, how would you check for it? I assume that there's some kind of signature.
Man, I'll tell you what. Yeah, mm-hmm. Look at the AP lead. A homeowner is saying a problem furnace could be to blame. That is the definition of a problem furnace, huh?
Yes.
That is one problematic furnace. Oh,
yeah,
Fernie.
I'll tell you what.
Have you done it again?
Problem with a capital P.
Then the people who passed away, former honor student, class officer, and track athlete, it's just two people just gone. And they say 80 homes were affected by the damage.
Wow, man. I'm gonna try to mute this so we can see just video of the visual. Okay, good. Yeah, man. Okay, so I mean, it's got to be. There's only one volatile explosive chemical that we pump into residential houses across America.
Fluoride in your water.
Well, yeah, and it would be, you have, when you get explosions, people either think it's gas or it's a meth lab, because what you need to make a meth lab, the chemicals there are very, very explosive. And probably, if I were to bet money on this, I would say, for like the furnace explanation or something, that it was just a slow gas leak, not a mainline leak, but actually like a leak within the house that just continually built up over time until it just was ready to just explode.
Yeah, I guess my question is, like, how long does that take? Like, how is that is that weeks, months? Like, is that a year? You know, to have things fill up to the point where it goes boom like that.
I would think like a week or so, because beyond that, I mean, you got to have. I mean, it depends on how, you know, what kind of weather stripping you have through, how weatherized your house is. And that's another thing. Indianapolis, they deal with real cold, unlike us wussies in Texas and Florida. So it's like they probably have the place sealed up pretty well, so that if it was leaking a gas on the inside, it's probably not all floating out. Look at this, man. You got buildings across the street where the garage door is dented in from where the debris hit, and where there's tiles, there's shingles ripped off the roof. That's incredible.
That is crazy pants, McGirt.
So let's just, for discussion's sake, let's take natural gas off the table. What else? What else you guys got? Let's spitball some ideas.
All right.
Flubber.
An angry housewife.
Jason Bourne.
I know. Somebody didn't want to actually set off a bomb, so they just threw a bunch of debris everywhere and said, "Oh, did you see that explosion?" And then, like, it's a cabal. It's like a secret conspiracy. And then they lit some fires.
Adolescent with mutant powers.
Could be any of those.
Yeah. So if you start thinking about what could cause an explosion like that, we get some crazy, like, random geothermal vent nobody thought about.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, boom, it just erupts.
Yeah, if we're going with, like, crazy... I mean, I guess, like, it still would be a natural gas thing, but, like, remember that snake story we had a while ago where it was just, like, the one house was just, like, under this, like, every 7 years, like, every snake within, like, you know, 50 miles comes and gathers and rubs together in a little snake snuggery.
It would be amazing.
Oh, which, by the way, remind me to talk about, we have a development in the snuggery investigation.
Oh, really?
Oh, excellent. Snuggery update.
We do.
So...
We do. We have a snuggery update.
Huh.
And so we'll close up the explosion thing, but there is actually an exhaustive list put together in a research paper about likely impacts from meteors that have killed people or injured people.
What?
Yes.
Like when it says likely locations or likely scenarios?
Well, when you're talking about something in 1420 BC in Israel.
Got it.
But some of these are a little more recent. You've got in 1879 in Newtown, Indiana, a man killed in bed, apparently by a meteor. Tunguska, Siberia, fire, two people killed. So that's, they think maybe two people died there when that happened. 1946, Santa Ana, Mexico, houses destroyed, 28 injured.
All right.
Okay.
If the president was killed by a meteor, and I'm not saying this president, I'm saying a president, an American president was killed by the meteor, is that
Alexander Hamilton?
Is that the biggest news of the weird story ever? Like, even more than, like, us, like, finding what we can classify as a Bigfoot or something?
Nobody would believe it.
Oh yeah, no. Yeah, look, we already have We have an assassination where the assassin says, "Yes, I'm the one who shot the president." And then
I did it.
It was me with this gun from this place. Then
from the training I received in your military that you know.
Right.
I did it.
Right. Mm-hmm. And people can't accept that. What makes
you
think we're
going to
accept?
What about the guy with the umbrella standing on the hill?
So you're saying that it would dwarf the Kennedy assassination and conspiracy theories if it's like, are we really to believe that a meteor came down from space and killed the president?
Yes, exactly.
Brian and I would be saying that. We've been writing that show all about called Do We Really Believe?
Yes, that's exactly the case.
I'm just saying that the official story leads us down the path of the first time ever a meteor has killed a head of state.
So it's like there's this trade-off between amount of credible evidence versus weirdness of the killing. So it's like you got, you know, an assassination is certainly an unusual event. But, you know, you have a case where you only have few photographs and the Zapruder film, right? Maybe occasional other things. So not very well covered, but not too remarkable of an assassination as far as assassinations go. So but even then, there's enough for people to disbelieve it. Then you got something like 9/11, which is crazy well documented. From all angles, from everything, right? Crazy well documented. But on the flip side, it's a much more odd killing, right? So it's a much more unusual event. So that trade-off, even though you've got much, much more footage, it's that much more weird, which causes, you know, the, I don't know, man, maybe it was an inside job. You get that. But I'm telling you, and a meteor strike, like there's no way, there does not exist enough cameras on planet Earth that even if they were all there on the day of, all pointed from all angles, still nobody would believe it.
I wouldn't believe it. You know, like, he's the only one that got hit. The only person that got hit in prison. I'd be like, all right. There's
front page USA Today, the picture of the meteor after it's been taken from the wreckage, headline, Rock of Ages, which is a tasteless headline, but they have it anyway. You don't believe it. It's there.
No, I mean, the footage clearly shows the meteor coming in. Used to target him.
So hey, that would actually be randomly the best part of those conspiracy theories is that, did you know that 6 months ago the CIA started a program called Rock Throwers?
Dude, no lie. Like, I've read the moon is a harsh mistress. I mean, that's all too. You get a super intelligent, trajectory calculating artificial intelligence, it can just kind of knock it from space, land it on a head of state's head.
But that's hard, though, because of atmosphere. But,
well, I mean, you know, you got to compensate for the chaos.
It's the chaos. It continues even after the trajectory.
Yeah, well.
Brian, have our first argument on. Do you really believe?
Amazing.
By the way, and real quick, just to go back to why I was talking about the snake house with the explosion thing, like I do, like, the craziest natural scenario would be like either like what Andrew said, that there's just this crazy thermal vent that just randomly opened up in this suburban Indiana neighborhood, or
portal to hell,
that it was just some kind of crazy like natural like gas reserve or something that at some point factored into explosion. But
mad scientist working on warp drive.
Yes.
Poltergeist house.
Man, these are
the
good.
Earth farting.
Troll. Imposter president? I don't know. Does this mean anything?
Our second sponsorship comes from Valhalla Industries. They didn't really even say anything. They just paid us money. So thank you to Valhalla Industries. Big fan.
Gentlemen,
I want an update.
I have a couple other items here, but I think it's time for a snuggery update.
Snuggery update.
Bust out the snuggery.
I've received
just for those of you who didn't tune in last episode on the thrilling edition of Weird Things, we brought up this woman who had a most peculiar occupation. She was a professional snuggler.
Cuddler. I believe it was cuddler.
Well, she works in a place called The Snuggery. And there was some snickering here.
Some snuggery sniggerers.
Some snay snares. Who snidely snuggested. There was some sort of snexual overtone.
Snexual overtone.
Specifically, you said that there's no there was, I believe the figure 98% sexual was
yes,
thrown out by
some
Justin Robert.
My point was that it was 98% of their customers. element is factored in more so than a massage into 98%. That there is a sexual component, maybe not totally sexual. I'm not saying that they would all proposition her for sex. I'm saying that there is a sexual component
right.
to it.
Well, and by the way, 98%. That was the real genius. It was 98% had a sexual component, and then sexual component went on to be defined as not having any biological sexual response or It was like if I remember correctly, your definition included maybe not even thinking about anything sexual, but it was sexual.
No,
at the same time.
That's all right. No. Listen, you would a classic Brushwood move. You go in later and just defame me. No, it is for a there's a sexual gratification, if even mentally. That you are doing something that is normally associated with sex.
Is that form of sexual gratification if it's purely mental? That sounds like the opposite of gratifying.
All right, I want to hear the news.
Listen, people get off in different ways, man. There's crazy ways people get off. All right, so let me get to our update. Hi, jury. I'm a guy located in Rochester, and I had been toying with the idea of going to the Snuggery ever since I heard about it a month ago, pretty much for the exact reason Brian was saying on the podcast. Well, I made the appointment for this Thursday. I figured you might be interested to know that one of your own is going to be patronizing the service you spent 20 minutes or so talking about. Also, if you're interested, I'd be happy to write up a short piece about my experience anonymously. I'd rather not my name be associated with this forever. I figured you guys might be curious to hear a firsthand account. Let me know, Jim Schwartz. No, I'm kidding.
221 Rooster Creek, Rochester, New York.
Yes, this is amazing.
And he is not, we had mentioned before, Rabid Badger, who is a huge fan of Weird Things and NSFW show, and hopefully at this point has at some point washed off the champagne and rested his hand from high-fiving after Obama got reelected. This is not him. He made a point to say that there are more than one. He said, P.S., I'm not Rabid Badger. Believe it or not, there are more than one of us living in this Arctic hellscape.
Dude, are you kidding me? This would be amazing to have original reporting live on the scene, undercover investigations. Is it sexual?
Tucked into the quilt right now. She's making some tea.
We're talking about our relatives.
Yes. It turns out.
And here's my point. To the sexual element, the only other context we have for snuggling is usually in a sexual manner as an adult.
It's this word we
have sex and you snuggle.
This word we, I don't think you're using it the way the word we works. This is I think you meant the word.
Are you not saying that the act of cuddling is a something that happens in the process of a sexual encounter?
So Justin, apparently, when he would knock on his mom's door at night because he was scared, when she would say, "Go away."
Yeah, I'm not saying solely,
awkward,
although I will
Justin.
Say through the majority of our lifetime, at a certain point, there is a tipping point for which any cuddling you might have done as a kid is outweighed the cuddling that you do as an adult, which has a different sexual context.
How do you explain the fact that my 5-year-old just asked me to cuddle with her? Like, what was going on? What was that like for me?
Okay. If you're going to be sticklers about this, then let's say non-familial cuddling, for which this is, unless you're related to the Snuggery lady. Right?
I hear what you're saying.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, what other non-familial cuddling is not sexual on some level?
But we've already defined, well, hopefully, and we've defined an exception. We've already defined an exception where that kind of contact is not sexual in nature. Are you saying that's the only situation now?
Wait, that people
hypothetically,
go to this...
let's say a grown adult man had a stuffed animal. Maybe it looked like a gorilla or a monkey.
let's say this man on a cold Florida winter night.
Or Las Vegas night.
Just wanted to get warm, cuddle up with.
Just it's a comfort blanket of sorts. Is that
sexual?
For a stuffed animal? Is that what we're talking about? Really? We're at the. Is it okay to cuddle with a stuffed animal?
We're trying to find out because you started with this very sweepy 98% of the time. We point out, oh, what if your child? Well, okay, that's different.
No. Listen, the distortions. This is, 98% of her customers
have a sexual component for wanting to go to the snuggery. Not all cuddling is sexual, but 98% of cuddling. That's a distortion.
From your mouth.
No, I never said that. You said that.
You said 98%.
Well, no, he said 98% of her customers.
Of a sexual component for going.
Did you ask the person, the emailer? Jim Schwartz.
He already said
phone number 422.
Yeah, Jim Schwartz already said. I really hope his name's
Jim Schwartz. Said, I mean, and just what he wrote, and we will be communicating with him. And yes, Jim, you are welcome to write about it on the site. Of course,
please,
you can stay.
Please,
we are begging you to lend credence to this, up to and including, is there at any point a gopher launch moment, and what is her reaction?
So, I want to know first. What is his expectations going in there? Why is he curious to know? And I'm curious because, and it is not a judgmental way. We will make jokes, of course, but in all sincerity, in the breadth of human experience, we want to know what is his is it curiosity? Is it this? Is it like, hey, well, it'd be kind of fun? I, you know, haven't been with, you know, a woman in a while and just missed that part of it. Is it that? Is it maybe he's like, well, you know, maybe there is something more to it. One of that too. And curious to know the reasons going in there. And then, yes, did it move?
I'm telling you, man, beyond divorced from the sexual component, when you hug another human being, especially if you're a single person, man or woman, who just day-to-day don't touch many other people, when you hug someone, you get a giant flood of endorphins, not sexual, but just good feelings from touching another person.
We got to bring Paul Zak in on this.
Yeah, absolutely, right? We should totally hit him up on that. I'm going to say, like, there are people where, like, I'm going to snuggle with somebody and I'm going to be floating for the next 2 days feeling like I'm a worthy individual who doesn't need to, you know.
Can I ask a question? Hold on. One final question just to button this up.
Sure.
Brian,
I got another question. You don't button this up.
Okay. Then I'm sorry. I thought you were trying to move on. You get last word. It's the Bill O'Reilly move. I'll give you the last word. Brian, you are somebody who patronizes massages a lot, right? You're on the road a lot. You are a big believer in the therapeutic element of massage.
You know,
right?
Brian, about that trip to Thailand where you rented out that whole hotel suite. You told us about that, right?
Well, yeah, and a lot of that comes from Dennis Rogers. Just because you sleep, you get all twisted up and all that stuff. But I'll be honest, part of it is just like it does feel good to be touched by another human being. That's for damn sure.
Absolutely. Okay. If you told Bonnie that you had a gig in Rochester and you were going to the snuggery, is she okay with that?
Oh, that's an interesting reversal. What a good reframe.
I have a reframe on the reframe.
Okay, let me hear your reframe on the reframe.
Well, hold on. All right. But then you have to answer both.
Okay.
So what if... Wait, did he go answer a phone?
No,
sorry. I kicked over something.
So hypothetically, Justin, you and your girlfriend have intimate talk, okay? What if you discussed those intimate things with another woman? How would you feel?
If I discussed our intimate details with another woman,
Andrew's point appears to be that that just because it would be disallowed by your relationship doesn't necessarily mean it's sexual. Because there's lots of things that Bonnie wouldn't allow me to do on the road.
Would that be crossing a line?
Yeah.
For me to discuss what we've talked about with somebody else, would she find it to be crossing a line?
Would that in a relationship, would that be considered out of bounds to discuss sex, things like that, with another woman?
I mean, between us, they're probably not as much. Or in with girlfriends in the past.
Well, I'll tell you this.
It would depend on what the conversation specifically would be about and whether or not it was embarrassing.
Yes.
And really, the line for embarrassment is different for each person.
So let's say, you would say that there are cases where it would be, okay?
There might be, yes.
What if it was your court-appointed psychologist?
then I don't think that it would be. I mean, like,
there are contexts okay.
for it. And I think that there were probably because there is an element to the snuggery, the fact that it is just a homegrown lady with a bed, you know, that it's not something that it's been done for 50 years. There's an element to that context for which I don't think we can just completely separate. That you can't just call her a court-appointed psychologist.
It's called the snuggery.
That's about as legit as you're going to get. Yeah. In my imagination.
Yeah, and there are fancy names, like the Moonlight Bunny Ranch.
In my imagination, she's got a sign, and the snuggery is like hand-painted in clouds like you'd see at a nursery or something. The snuggery with bears, and I see balloons.
It's got a website, thesnuggery.org.
No way. Go into the website right now. Hold on.
They have the double cuddle, allows clients to cuddle with two cuddlers concurrently.
What? I bet the double cuddle would be awesome. I would feel very appreciated. Why snuggle? Quite simply because it makes us feel good. Research provides us with ample evidence that physical contact with others has a positive effect on physical and mental health. Dude, I'll tell you what. Think about it this way.
Wait, Q&A. What happens if I become sexually aroused during my session?
Oh, Q&A. Yes.
Answer. Don't worry. It happens! Exclamation point. Although sexual 98% of the time. Although sexual activity is not permitted, arousal is perfectly normal and should not make anyone feel uncomfortable. I may be flipping my opinion on this. Do clothes pajamas always stay on for the duration of the session? Absolutely. Nudity is not permitted.
Am I supposed to talk during my session? Wow. Do I have to tip? Of course you don't have to tip, but we're...
No, but apparently she won't kick you out of bed if you do.
She has a bachelor's in brain and cognitive science. And the other one has a degree in music therapy, and she plays the glockenspiel.
Really? That's epic. Look, man.
Sounds like they should be on tour with the Double Clicks.
Let's just leave it up to our in the field reporter to explain what the experience was like.
Yeah.
Again, it's not the whole reason. It's just a reason. I'm not saying that it can't be contained and there can't be a therapeutic element to it, but there is an element that is undeniably sexual, I think, for the vast majority of her customers.
98%, huh?
Collegetown, Rochester. Gotta wonder though, like, what's going right for a hooker there?
In Rochester? I don't know, man. Probably less than we might think.
Yeah, I'm saying. So, you know, $60 for a snuggling to maybe try to, you know.
But, you know, I don't think a lot of guys will want a hooker. You know, there's a lot of social baggage that comes with a hooker.
I got nothing.
All right. We defer to your experience on that.
I'm just it seems to me like there is if we're looking at the grand scheme of ways that you can be sexually gratified for money, that on that road there is a gap between the snuggery and a hooker, but it is still on the same road.
All right.
Interesting.
What else? You said you had some other.
What would you say? Wait, is that a thumbs up or thumbs down from Bonnie? We need to find out from Bonnie whether or not you're allowed to go to the snuggery, Brian.
Yeah,
you go to the Rochester Institute of Technology.
I'll bring that back. I'll bring back my. I'll tell you what. Here's my undercover investigation. I'll just bring it up and say, and just act like, yeah. So I was thinking about going to just snuggery. Just gonna go to the snuggery.
Is this one of Andrew and Justin's stupid ideas?
No, I've got a show in Rochester, and
then it'll be like, fine, go. Just go. You'll get that. Just go. Kind of that.
Just go.
And then what? And then I'm not telling you. And then
no, I think if Bonnie wasn't cool, then I think Bonnie's the time to shut it down.
I'm just saying, it's like
Bonnie might turn that key.
I'm just saying that Brian's going to come home and then he's going to wake up with a bill next to his bed. it's 8 hours, $60 an hour, Brian. That is $480 you owe me, plus tip.
And let's just say there will be hefty penalties assessed for you not following the stated guidelines on nudity.
There is a strict policy. Amazing.
You should see the instant financial assessment triggered for impregnation as well.
Yeah, man,
9 months
of
having to cuddle that thing.
All right, did you say you had some other stuff, Andrew?
Do you want to go to picks?
I actually have a pick that I'm way excited about.
Well, in that case, Justin, you go first.
All right, not a sci-fi pick this week, although I am finishing up the Thrawn trilogy, which is amazing and awesome, and I love it, and I love the reader. Again, if you've read the Thrawn trilogy and you love it, you owe it to yourself to listen to these audio versions. The reader is so awesome. The sound design is so great. And all it does is, now this is the first one that I've read knowing that we live in a universe where there is going to be more Star Wars movies. And it makes me more excited than I was before when I was extraordinarily excited. So I'll have a review on that next week, probably when I'm finished with it. However, the non-sci-fi pick is that I've been catching up with the HBO series that ended this year, Eastbound and Down, starring Danny McBride.
Yeah.
Written by Jody Hill and directed by a bunch of episodes. I so love this series. And I think from a storytelling perspective, it really is one of the more daring kind of comedies, to have somebody that is so simultaneously unlikable, awful, selfish, and yet completely open and vulnerable, and just this like this squishy mass of just I guess he doesn't know who he is. This self-loathing and lack of self-confidence that just manifests itself in these awful and horrible and selfish ways. So check it out. It is really, really funny. And also, Danny McBride playing the role of Kenny Powers, or Danny McBride. I don't assume that he's really any different than Kenny Powers, seeing as every other role that he has is kind of Kenny Powers-esque.
Sure.
But check it out. It is super, super hilarious. The writing is amazing. And the cameos are just great. Every time that there's another, somebody that's like important to the plot, they just did such a great job casting, including Will Ferrell doing a Ric Flair impression, which is amazing.
That's awesome. I wanted to recommend The Walking Dead, not that television show and not that comic book.
Well, Brian, that's it. What other forms of media could there possibly be?
Oh, Andrew Main. You've forgotten about the realm of interactive imagination. The Telltale Games came out with they're coming out with. They got four parts out, and they got a fifth episode on the way, based on the comic book video game version of The Walking Dead, and it's exquisite. I've actually been live streaming my playthroughs of the first few episodes. We did episode one and episode two, and they are, there are elements of it that occasionally get a little bit slightly actiony, like when a zombie jumps out and grab you, it says like hit Q to shake him off, and then you hit Q panicked, and then really the bulk of the storytelling is in the dialogue options. Unlike, and I don't think I've ever seen this before, in all of the dialogues, remaining silent is a viable option that you're allowed to do, so that whenever someone asks you a question, you have one of three or four different responses, but you also have a timer bar that goes down to zero. So it adds this element where you can't think about it. You can't decide how you feel about something. You have to go with your gut in your reaction. You're either going to tell the truth, or you're going to lie. You're either going to say this girl's your daughter, or you're going to admit that, you rescued her from a house somewhere. And you find yourself in complicated situations because every character remembers what you said to them. And if you get caught in a lie, that's problematic. And there are occasionally the same kind of agonizing decisions that have to be made that you see in the television show and that you see in the comic book. But it is fundamentally different when you're the person who has to make that agonizing decision. And especially when you have to live with the consequences and knowing that it will sincerely piss off and estrange certain parts of the bar. I mean, I'm not going to say what, but at one point in the game, zombies attack and you have to decide.
Spoiler.
You have to decide which of two people you're going to rush to help. And you do not have a lot of time to decide, and you dive over and do it. It's phenomenal. I'm only two episodes in. From what I hear, people are saying that the situations they face in episode 4 had them bawling in front of their computer, which it's like, and that's the final frontier with video games, of the emotions to evoke. The easiest is fear, because you just throw a scary face and a surprise, which is why 20 years ago you would see stuff like Doom coming out where, you know, you'd be like, oh, this is awesome. I'm feeling something. And then, you know, you feel elation and joy. But I've never really had a game, you know, sweep me up and get me totally crying because I believed in the characters and situations. And it sounds like The Walking Dead might be the one to do it. So I think it's only $20 on Steam, and you get all 5 episodes. 4 of them are released. The 5th one, I believe, comes out later this month.
Ethical question. Surprise weird things question. Video games are getting more sophisticated, more sure. processing power. We go look at our Moore's Law. We look at our graph. We're going to see a point where you're actually going to be able to buy the equivalent of a human brain in transistors.
Sure.
And I don't know when that's going to be, but I think it's within 20 years' time that'll be a thing. And whether or not that makes it intelligent or human is a totally different thing. But we're going to get to a point where those characters that you're playing are going to have very complex systems, very, very complex algorithms, and be able to behave. Already video games can behave in ways that the creators did not anticipate. You see that with swarming behavior. We saw crowds and swarms in video games start to behave and do flocking behaviors that the programmers didn't anticipate. It was just this emergent property of a complex system. As you start building these artificially intelligent systems that learn, as you point out, remember what you say. Real quick side note, you know the marshmallow test with kids where they test patience of kids? And so it's a classic test where they ask a kid, like, would you like one marshmallow now or would you like to have 2 in 15 minutes? And researchers say this is a great example of showing kids, you know, who are impatient versus kids who are patient. The ones that waited, you know, turned to later on have much a better delayed gratification. Well, new research has pointed out that there's a big critical flaw in that study, which was been long ignored. And that is, what are you measuring? This child's patience or this child's faith and confidence in the researchers that he will actually get those 2 marshmallows later on?
Right.
And they find out that the kids that go for them now, very often they're from environments where, you know, the parents will, I'll give you, no, I changed my mind. I didn't think that you behaved well. And they're hedging their bets. I'm like, if I take this marshmallow now, I know I get a marshmallow. If I wait 15 minutes, and researchers just assume. But anyhow, those are things you don't anticipate. You create a study, you create research, and you do this, and then you have this sort of, you know, it's one of the things in parenting, consistency is extremely important. Children who come from inconsistent households have problems later on. So these are the kind of little things that come into play that you don't really think about that can create emergent behaviors. And so in video games, like you're talking about, we're going to get to a point where they're going to get much more complex. You play video games now where you have your opponents will all of a sudden learn from what you're doing, adapt novel strategies, and as they get more and more intelligent. When do we get into an ethical thing like you're talking about in a Walking Dead game where you're going to kill off a character?
Oh, where you feel morally so let's say I mean we always see this story played out in, you know, movies and books like iRobot, where it's just like, you know, ethically you've got a sentient being that wants to continue to live, you shut them down. We always see it with physical robots, but what happens when we create multiple sentient entities within a video game?
Which will happen first?
Yeah. Wow, that's interesting. I mean, I guess I'm going to.
Is there an ethical point at which turning off the game is unethical, is immoral?
Or you know, what if
we laugh? We look back at how people treated animals a long time ago. You know, throw a sack of kittens into the water. It's the humane thing to do. You know, right. Watch these bears fight dogs. Ah, ha, ha, they're just bears. I have this complex video game that has more neurons than my average household pet. and I'm going to kill the character, shut it down.
Well, do you want to know what I think the difference might be? Is if we start to do it and we find out that our experiences are different, and therefore each version of it is unique, that it's not just the same program that we are turning on and off, that we think of it being off as its sleep or its rest, but each incarnation of those characters or that experience is unique in a way.
Yeah, so imagine you first load the game and you get a kind of a tabula rasa blank character that asks questions, that plays chess with you, that interacts with you for a period of 5, 6, 7 years, to where by the time it's by that moment you have what appears to be a fully interactive, you know, and let's say it's just a bot running around in World of Warcraft, right? It's a software engine that interacts in a world. Maybe people know it's a bot or don't know it's a bot, but regardless, its being is shaped by the people it interacts with, and it's able to tell stories about people that it met and places it went and things it did. It gets cheerful.
Thinks it has friends.
It gets cheerful. You know, it follows up with you in the real world asking what you're up to. I mean, because think about how many of our friendships through the internet, we never meet these people in physical in meet space, but we believe they're real because of the and we believe in their friendships. You know, it's like there are so many people that I know from doing stuff like the Weird Things podcast that these are precious relationships to me. And then to pull the plug on them, would that be an ethical thing? I don't know. I would say this. It is exactly as ethical a dilemma as taking a razor blade to the Mona Lisa is. It would be tragic and feel wrong, but the only reason is for what it represents or for what it comes to mean.
But how do you know any other being experiences pain?
Because it skirts away from physical harm or reacts differently when pain occurs.
Well, programs and robots do that now.
Yeah. Wow, that's interesting.
So, and I'm not saying that we're supposed to have a clear-cut answer, because I don't. I genuinely don't. And I think that there's whole schools of philosophy that go into this. And Daniel Dennett, one of my favorites, talked about that. And one of the arguments he's discussed is the idea that, where do we want to show sympathy for organisms, as we should, and even small things, mice, whatever, what have you, and even insects. If you take your arm has more nerves in it than many forms of life that we generally, a humane person tries to be sympathetic towards. We don't anesthetize the arm to prevent it from feeling pain. We anesthetize our brain so we don't feel the pain it experiences. And we could say because there's no centralized system. But when you start to get into things that have a memory and have this, you know, when you're shooting at that video game character, there comes a point where if we just measure pure neurons to transistors, which they're not the same, but we'll just pretend for the moment.
Well, and this is also something that was covered in Steven Pinker's book, The Better Angels of Our Nature, where he talks about it's not just our, you know, first it was the massive decrease in violence against other men. But then we saw, that expand, or what was considered, you know, men in the racist slavery days, and then eventually, you know, like, oh, hey, look, slaves are men too. What? How about that? And then, hey, guess what? Women are human too. And then children. And then we see a decrease in child abuse. And then we see that expand to animal rights, to where now we are seeing, and you know, not even as a joke, he talks about movement among fly fishermen to just get rid of the hooks. They're like, look, you're just gonna give back the fish anyway. Just, you know, fly fish without the hook. You get the nibble, and you know what would have happened next. And there are people who report that it's, you know, just about as satisfying as it was before. Now, whether or not that's obviously to most of us that seems silly right now, but will that seem silly in another 20 years? And obviously, you know, the idea of protecting a semi-sentient computer algorithm seems silly to us now, but will that seem silly in 50 or 80 years?
Precisely. I think that it's a, you know, as you just described, how we expand. And one of the things that happens, too, is that we look back and we don't understand racism. We think it's stupid and it was and all that. But we look back at, let's say, the Greeks and the Chinese and other groups that have looked apart. Everybody around them is total barbarians. The Greeks, because they had a high level of civilization, they had language, they had culture, they had all these things, and the people around them were living closer in their minds to animal level than to human level. Mm-hmm. And these Germanic tribes didn't appear to have much culture compared to them. They lived like bears in the woods, so to speak. And when you have people in instances of slavery where you take one group of people, deny them education, deny them the ability to form their own cultural alliances, their own marriages, all these other things, and you forget those are the things that make us contribute to the aspects of the humanizing aspects of civilization, people for the longest time perpetuated this idea that these people are subhuman, which in fact, you know, and that's a thing that's gone through when the Romans had slaves. You know, it's a very similar thing. And Romans had slaves, et cetera, you know, because these people were illiterate, they weren't educated, whatever, and it was a way to say this is why we're different, and they're not even capable of this. But then you start to realize that, well, no, they are. And so these things change over time. And even today we have certain biases that we tend to, even amongst people, that we tend to sort of forget about. And, you know, there's certain groups of people that are still, it's not quite falling in out of, you know, political correctness to make fun of.
Right.
And because, and, but even though the, you know, whether it's somebody, you know, we use trail, you know, for expressions like, you know, trailer park, you know, or rednecks and things like that, and a lot of different connotations, but access to education, cultural relevance of education, all these things play into that. And we still make these little judgments. And I think that's going to be the things you pointed out. That's going to be the thing of the future is this, are we going to look back with the frame of reference of the future and say, well, you know, maybe Pac-Man had a soul.
Some rudimentary version of it, sure. All right, you got a pick for us, Andrew?
I got a pick. I got two picks. Real quick, first one is I've been playing this. It's addictive. I love it. I finished it. Now I'm going back to try to do better at it. Angry Birds Star Wars.
Really?
Oh, it's fun. It's fun. It's just the way they imagined the Angry Birds in the Star Wars universe. The Han Solo character, the Chewbacca, all of it is just delightful fun. If you like Angry Birds and you like Star Wars, very, very enjoyable fun. The way they just tried to create the different worlds set within there from Tatooine all the way to the Death Star, recommend it. And then a Netflix, and it's available on like every single platform, which makes it even better. So I've been playing it on my iPad. But my other pick is a Netflix Watch Now, Watch Instant Streaming pick, and that is a documentary about Mr. Woody Allen.
Oh, wow.
It's a two-parter. It's still available if you just look up Woody Allen. Very, quite recent, was done, I think, just a year ago, and a lot of access to his sister, to Woody Allen, to his friends, his coworkers, everybody about that, and they cover his whole life. They go over a little bit into the Sun Yi thing, not heavily, but you know, you get sort of that perspective on that, but it's about Woody Allen from birth all the way forward to, you know, who he was as a creator, all the movies he's done. You just realize the body of work, and he's a guy that you start to think, well, maybe his best movies are behind him, and then he comes out and does something like Match Point or Midnight in Paris, and you realize this guy still got a lot of talent and is doing amazing work even to this day. He does a movie every year.
Yeah, movie a year, man. That's an insane output.
And he was a magician when he was a kid, too, by the way. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I did not know that.
Magician, he would have his little sister. The way he would use his little sister is he'd have his little sister go, oh, look at his left hand, while Woody was using his right hand to do something. So always playing the angles.
That's awesome. So, what's the name of it? A Woody Allen, a documentary?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, here we go. I just found it.
So there you go. Woody Allen, a documentary.
That's awesome. And now, wow, that was just last year, huh?
Yep. Highly recommend it.
Right on. I think that may be my favorite thing.
Just a beast of a human.
I think that's my favorite thing about Netflix is how the barrier to, like, I just get so wound tight about the risk of investing myself in movies, not just for, you know, for the financial investment, because what's a couple bucks, but you just don't want to feel like a dupe who threw your money at something and then wasted your time. And Netflix instant streaming just makes it to where, like, I can watch something that's genuinely terrible and feel good about it because somehow it doesn't feel like I spent anything. I don't feel like I cast my dollar vote and that, you know, I made the world worse as a result.
Well, I'll just snuggle out those anxieties, Brian, next time you're in Rochester.
I got to work that out with Bonnie.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on Do You Really Believe?
Say it. You got to say it.
It's been weird.
to sponsor the podcast? Do you have $30? If so, go to weirdthings.com/sponsor, and you can have Justin say whatever you want. He's a trained ape.